Welcome to the Capital News. Today is July 7th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. Wanted to make sure I got to you guys this weekend because I did miss our episodes on Friday. Had some stuff going on. But because there was the jobs report that came out Friday, I didn't have enough time to get through it throughout the day. So I wanted to make sure I had time to analyze it, go through it, see what made sense, what didn't make sense, do some comparisons to some other reports that we had out in the week. Particularly that of the ADP jobs report, that is the payroll processing company. They put out a report in conjunction with Moody's Analytics. So we're going to have this comparison between the government statistics out of the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, the BLS, versus the ADP report. It's typically par for course that there are discrepancies between the two. It causes some confusion. It makes it more of an art as opposed to a science in analyzing some of these numbers and some of the data that we are seeing. And then obviously because we have the Federal Reserve meeting at the end of this month, I believe the dates are July 30th and July 31st, this has a big role in the decision that the Federal Reserve may or may not make in regards to cutting interest rates. Will they cut them? Will they remain on hold? That's a big question. And we saw the markets move on this news. Now, it was pretty much a shortened week. It was a holiday week with July 4th and everything, a shortened trading days. So I don't put a lot of emphasis on these types of days or weeks that are shorter trading weeks that are prone to witnessing lower levels of volume. So when you have a lower level of volume, there's, in my opinion, less conviction as to proper price discovery. So fewer actors can move the markets in larger swings, plus or minus, depending on where they're trading. But if you have more people in the room and everybody's bidding up against each other, then you should have more stable prices. But what happened? So the S&P closed down 5 points on Friday. The Dow lost 44 points. The NASDAQ lost 8. And the Russell 2000 was able to stage a little bit of a late-day comeback and gain 3.5 points for the day. Now, all of the other major indices, again, the S&P, the Dow, and the NASDAQ, while they did close down lower for the day, coming off their record highs, the Dow was down about 200 points at its low point. 200 points, and it was able to stage a rally to only close down 44 points. And this was pretty much true across the board with the S&P and NASDAQ as well. The main reason for all of this, for this big sell-off, was because there was a positive, you heard me, a positive jobs report number that came out from the government, from the BLS, Bureau of Labor Statistics. 224,000 jobs were added in the month of June, far outstripping expectations of about 160,000, 165,000, far outstripping the jobs number of 75,000 that came out in May, and we're going to talk about that because that number was actually revised down, as was April's numbers. But nevertheless, you had what would be deemed positive news causing a sell-off in the stock market. Well, how could this make sense? It could only make sense in the world of financial Oz in which we find ourselves. It could only make sense when the crybabies and the drug addicts on Wall Street want their fix from the Federal Reserve. They put more emphasis on getting high, on getting their dose of methadone, of heroin, of crack cocaine, whatever you want to use. They put more emphasis on getting the drug than they do on having positive economic news. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a sign of a sick society, that something is wrong. Nevertheless, we can attribute it to perhaps low volume. We can contribute it to an overreaction, whatever the case may be. But I really think that this is a sick system in which we find ourselves because everybody is just more concerned with what the Federal Reserve is going to do, what the president is going to tweet out, than what the fundamental issue, what the fundamental story is of the U.S. economy and the global economy, for that matter, because it's very hard to separate them to separate the two because we are highly interconnected. And that's okay. We're looking at the oil market. WTI is trading at $57 a barrel. Gold sold off on this positive news, and we'll get to that, the reasons why. But gold is now sitting at $1,400 an ounce. It was slightly below the $1,400 mark. Silver is at $15 an ounce. The 10-year U.S. Treasury rallied. It is now back above 1.9% and has a two handle, so it's now yielding 2.048%. And the VIX, the volatility index, gained 6 percentage points and is now at $13.28. We told you folks you had to watch this when the VIX gets down really below 14, 13. It was below 13. You know, is it going to give? Is it going to come back here? So we got to pay attention to that. But the reason you saw gold sell off, the reason why you saw treasuries, the yield start to rally, is because the dollar strengthened. And the dollar strengthened because of the good jobs number, which made the bets, the expectations for a rate cut taking place this month by the Federal Reserve, it reduced those odds. So instead of it being about 100%, now it's like 90, 91% that they're going to cut rates at the end of this month. Still fantastic odds that they're going to cut rates, by the way. But this is how the market reacts. This was good news. Good news is bad news. Bad news is good news. Remember, we talk about this. We've had several podcasts on this. Sometimes good news is good news. Sometimes bad news is bad news. It all depends on the week. I mean, I don't know who we're dealing with here. It's like a deranged person that needs to be locked up in a straitjacket. But no, this is our financial system. And it's not just here in the United States. It's the world over. We just get front row seats here, as George Carlin said, the late and great comedian, to the freak show. When you're born in the United States of America, you get a front row seat to the freak show that is this world. So this makes no sense from a logical standpoint. But if you understand that we are in a financial world of Oz, then it does make sense, unfortunately. So the crybabies, once again, throwing their hissy fit, have a market sell-off. Dow loses 200 points earlier in the day. Because, now this doesn't make it look good that the Federal Reserve is going to cut rates. And we need the Federal Reserve to cut rates to come to the rescue, to save the stock market. Because that's the mandate of the Federal Reserve. Oh, no, it isn't. Their mandate is full employment and stable prices, price stability. Not bailing out Wall Street. Not bailing out the one percenters. It's not their job to bail out the 99 percenters. It's their mandate to achieve full employment and price stability. Well, if you look at the jobs numbers, if you look at the unemployment rate, which is relatively remaining stable now at 3.7%, it ticked up slightly because we were around 3.5, 3.6. Now we're at 3.7, still at a 49-year low. I mean, the Federal Reserve can check off that box, can't they? What about price stability? Well, we're told all the time by the Federal Reserve. We're told all the time by the White House and by the president himself, who was also taking to Twitter over the past couple of days. Once again saying, patting himself on the back for the jobs report, and once again saying that there is no inflation, and again attacking the Federal Reserve, saying they don't know what they're doing. Well, if their mandate is full employment and price stability, they check off both of those boxes. So what's the president talking about that they don't know what they're talking about from that standpoint? Overall, I happen to be in agreement with the president from the standpoint that I don't want the Federal Reserve to exist because they have no business doing what they're doing. However, the president of the United States is not saying this. He's just saying they don't know what they're doing. He's not saying abolish the Federal Reserve. He's no longer saying that lower interest rates and quantitative easing is distortionary, that it benefits the few at the expense of the many like he used to when he was a candidate, when he was a citizen, a civilian, I should say. That's why I voted for him. I mean, there's a whole bunch of other issues out there, but that's the root cause, people. You end the Federal Reserve, you abolish the Federal Reserve, you abolish the federal income tax. Those are the root causes of so many of our problems. And I said, maybe this guy actually gets it. And that's why I voted for him. Now he's president. He used to say all these numbers were fake, phony. They were bloated. There was a bubble in the economy, a bubble in the stock market. Now he's behind that resolute desk in the Oval Office, and now everything's fine. He applauds himself. He pats himself on the back. And now he's calling for more lower interest rates and more quantitative easing. This I cannot stand for. He didn't stand for it. So is he just another typical politician who says one thing to get elected, and then once in office, flips? Thought he was supposed to be different. Thought he was supposed to be draining the swamp. You don't get much swampier than the Federal Reserve. You don't get much swampier than increasing the size of the federal government, spending more taxpayer dollars, which is what we are doing. Draining the swamp again, we have not even begun to drain the kiddie pool. Wake up, people. What's going on here? So when we're looking at the ADP report that came out earlier in the week, this report concluded that only 102,000 jobs were added to U.S. payrolls in the month of June. That's a stark difference compared to the BLS number of 224,000. Hello, something's missing. If you dive deeper into these numbers, one of the things that really caught me off guard here, or I should say is something that really caught my attention, is if you look at the ADP report, it claims that the construction industry lost 18,000 jobs. Conversely, the government report states that construction gained 21,000 jobs for the month of June. How can this be? How can there be a 39,000 job swing? Negative 18,000 to a positive 21,000. Who's right? Who's wrong? Is it somewhere in the middle? But that's a big swing, ladies and gentlemen. Now, one would conclude, maybe perhaps, or think logically, well, this is the spring, this is the summer season, construction should be picking up. And depending on what part of the country you're in, you may see construction taking place all over. So you would say, okay, well, it makes more sense to look at the government's number and say, well, there's a plus 21,000 for construction jobs in the month of June. That makes more sense than a loss of 18,000. But if you look at a lot of the other numbers that we have been talking about consistently, with a lot of things rolling over and slowing down, it also makes sense that maybe there were 18,000 jobs that were lost. So who do you believe? This is why this becomes much more of an art than it does a science. This is why you cannot put too much emphasis on any one of these economic puzzle pieces. You have to do deeper dives. You have to bring everything together to paint as vivid a picture as possible. That's what I attempt to do here at the Capital News. I think we do a pretty good job because a lot of the things that we have been stating since we've been on air back in February have come to fruition. Now, the predictions as to what the President of the United States is going to tweet out over the weekend, there ain't nobody on the face of this planet who can predict that. I don't even know if the President can predict what he's going to do with some of these tweets and some of these comments. Shooting from the hip sometimes, off the cuff, this, that, the other. So I'm not going to try to predict what the President is going to tweet out next because I have no idea. Although I do know that I have responded to the President via my Twitter account to his when he comes out and he starts attacking the Federal Reserve. Again, I want him to attack the Federal Reserve, but I want him to say, end the Fed, abolish the Fed, not continue with the disastrous policies that have placed this country and, quite frankly, the rest of the world in the condition which it is today. If low interest rates for too long caused the great financial recession that we went through in 07, 08, 09, then how can even lower interest rates for an even longer period of time be the solution? It can't be. Candidate Trump, civilian Trump, was right. Distortionary, bubble-causing economic policies from the Federal Reserve and from the federal government. Now he's the president, and he wants more of it. And he's back out there, and he's got his cronies back out there, his lackeys out there, Peter Navarro, one of his lead negotiators with trade. I mean,
well, if they cut interest rates, the Dow could hit 30,000 points. Uh-huh.
And then what? And then what after it hits 30,000? Then where does it go? 60,000? 102,000? Or does it plummet back to earth in reality? After everybody says, oh my goodness, we're at 30,000, based off of what? Money printing? Counterfeiting money? Throwing it out there in the system? To alleviate a whole bunch of crybabies on Wall Street who can't take it? Give me a break. What a joke. What a scam. What about people on fixed income? Care about them? What about people trying to save? Do you care about them? Because the other thing that the president's coming out and tweeting is saying that the Federal Reserve has no feel, that they don't know what they're doing. But then he says the solution is for them to cut more interest rates. Because that's what the Chinese are doing. That's what the Japanese are doing. And that's what the Europeans are doing. Now, forgive me if I'm wrong. But didn't the president say America first? Didn't the president say in his State of the Union address this year that the United States will never be a socialist country? Then why do we need to follow the communist Chinese and the socialist Europeans? Can you answer that question? On cutting interest rates. And if you look at Europe, it's in negative territory. It's decimating their banking sector. It's decimating that entire continent. We talk about this all the time and what is happening. You think Deutsche Bank just happened? No, it didn't. You have to look at the genesis of all of this. And Deutsche Bank isn't the only one. Deutsche Bank is just going to be the one that makes all the headline news until others start to follow suit. We're expecting 20,000 jobs from Deutsche Bank to be cut here relatively soon, if not more. We're anticipating 50 billion euros worth of bad assets to be bundled up and put into what they're going to call a bad bank. That's what they're going to call it, a bad bank. And I told you, if it's 50 billion, it's a lot more than that that's actually on their books. But if they said, well, we're going to put 100 billion in a bad bank, 100 billion, holy moly, that's a lot of money. So they had to tamper some expectations. But 50 billion, maybe that's doable. And so far, they're getting away with it. You know, so somewhat of a side note, but you have probably seen in the news, Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, publicly, on a couple of different occasions, physically shaking at some public events. Now, I hope that the woman's fine, but she has been shaking. Speculation here. But does she know something more behind the scenes with Deutsche Bank or Commerce Bank? Because we were talking before, folks, that Germany was trying to merge Commerce Bank and Deutsche Bank together. And had that happened, you probably would have seen, and we reported this, you probably would have seen 40, 50, maybe even 60,000 jobs cut if those two banks merged, because there just would have been so much overlap between the two organizations. Those talks fell apart, and now Deutsche Bank is still trying to restructure. They're closing down some units, and now they're talking about laying off 20,000 jobs. I believe in North America, there's about 9,300 jobs in North America, most of those being in the United States. Now, will all of those jobs be lost? I do not know, but I would have to imagine that there will be a significant portion of that population here in North America and the United States getting cut as a result of this quote-unquote restructuring. If Deutsche Bank goes down, it's going to be a catalyst. It will be a global catalyst. It will be something akin to Lehman Brothers. So we will keep you up to speed on this. Getting back to the Federal Reserve, what will the Federal Reserve actually do at the end of this month? So they have a jobs report here that was above expectations, 224,000. Now you did have April and May. Those jobs numbers were actually revised downward. May was abysmal. It was 75,000. It actually was revised lower a few thousand. So it stands at 72,000 jobs being created in the month of May. Again, we have our U3 number at 3.7%, and we have our U6 number, which is the broader aggregate of how many people are unemployed, taking into consideration those who are discouraged workers, those who are working part-time but would rather be working full-time, that stands at 7.2%. Another interesting point of note is so far throughout 2019, the monthly average job creation has been a positive 172,000 jobs per month, 172,000, versus an average of 223,000 per month through 2018. So a swing of about 50,000 jobs per month on the average job gain from 2018 through 2019. Now, 2019, we're only halfway through. That could switch, plus or minus, but that's where it stands. I thought that was an interesting point to note. Another interesting point to note, ladies and gentlemen, is if you look at a graph of unemployment, and we've had this discussion before, unemployment tends to be at its lowest before a recession, which it makes sense. You're at its lowest, everything seems fine. These are your peak to troughs in your business cycle and your recessions, okay? It tends to be the lowest before a recession. Well, we are at 49, 50-year lows on the unemployment rate. And if you look at a graph, you can find this on the Federal Reserve's economic website. You just look at it because you have shaded recessions on this graph. You sort of start scratching your head. You say, how much further can we go? Can we continue to go much lower? And how much longer can we potentially level out if we're going to stay at 3.6, 3.7, 3.8%? How much longer will that be? Well, I think we're going to have some other signals that are going to tell us what's likely to transpire here in the near future, because we're going to be in the midst of Q2 earnings season here, really full bore in a couple of weeks already. So we're going to see if we're in an earnings recession, if we're going to continue strong, if there's still going to be strong revenues, strong profits, or if they're starting to turn over. And then what we have to pay close attention to is forward guidance. Because what some of these reports are going to come out are also probably going to indicate what the Federal Reserve may or may not like, may more likely doing at the end of this month. So if it's weak, that's going to be bad news. And remember, bad news is good news, meaning the Federal Reserve will come to the rescue. But again, they have their dual mandate, full employment, stable prices. They can check both of those boxes. They have a record high stock market. So why do they need to cut interest rates? I mean, we have a 10-year U.S. Treasury, which has so many other rates pegged to it, namely a 30-year mortgage, at 2%, at 1.9%, depending on the day. How much lower does it need to go? This is a serious question. They're going to cut 25 basis points. How much stimulus is 25 basis points going to give to an economy? Serious question. That's all it takes? We just cut by 25 basis points and boom, that's it? I don't think that's going to be enough. But why would the Federal Reserve cut even deeper if they're fulfilling their mandate according to their own numbers, according to the government's own numbers, according to what the President of the United States even says? Great jobs numbers and no inflation. That's exactly what the Federal Reserve's mandates are. They check both boxes. He's obsessed, the president, with the stock market. It's making record highs. So please tell me what the argument is for even lower interest rates. How much lower do you want to go? Do you want to become Europe? Do you want to play these games of negative interest rates? Do you want to send your money away to get less back? I don't. It makes no sense whatsoever. Why are we being asked or told by the President of the United States that we should follow China, and we should follow Japan, and we should follow Europe? This makes no sense to me whatsoever. I don't know who's advising him. I have reason to believe it's Peter Navarro, based off of an interview I watched on CNBC the other day. My goodness, this man was dropped on his head. And we're going to have a podcast on this, because I believe this man has the president's ear. Or they talk closely because they're both saying the same stuff. So I don't know who's convincing who, but I have my belief that it's Peter Navarro convincing the president. and I have a lot of problems with Peter Navarro. So we'll see what the Federal Reserve does. Also, before the Federal Reserve makes their monetary decision, we will have a GDP figure for the second quarter. Anybody's guess what that's going to be? Honestly, it's going to be anybody's guess, because some other economic news that has been coming out over this past week, and of course you're never going to hear this from the President of the United States because it was bad economic news, especially from the standpoint of trade. April and May's trade deficits were huge. They were huge, particularly against China. Now, you're going to hear the president say this? You're going to hear Peter Navarro come out and say this? No. No. They're going to continue to come out and bash the Federal Reserve, which I am fine with if they said to abolish it, to end the Fed. They don't. They say, let's give Wall Street a bigger high. Let's give the 1% their fix, which is what they've been getting for the past decade. Let's get more malinvestment going. Let's push people even further out onto the risk curve to make even bigger financial mistakes that are going to have systemic risks for everybody, even those who are financially frugal and financially prudent. Just keep making mistakes. Keep continuing with the malinvestment. This is a huge disservice to the American people, especially those who are doing things right, and those who are on fixed income, and those people who are trying to save. Because another thing you got to look at when you talk about unemployment is a whole bunch of other ratios that exist. Employment ratios. These things are not moving. And they're not in a good spot. And you have a lot of job creation, I think, because you have a lot of people working two, sometimes even three jobs. But then we're told there's no inflation. Well, if there's no inflation, then one job should be enough, because your cost of living should be stable, maybe even going down if you listen to some people in the government. Everything's fantastic. Well, then why do people need to work two or three jobs? Because the cost of living is so expensive, i.e. inflation, the effects of inflation, I should say. All right, so we'll see what the Federal Reserve does. But anticipation now from this jobs number is they are more likely going to cut 25 basis points, not 50. If they don't cut, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they hold steady another month. But that's going to be contingent on a strong or relatively strong GDP number that comes out in the second quarter. I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe an earnings season from what the Federal Reserve can see for the first few weeks of July being okay. Nothing to write home about, no big concerns. Again, full employment, stable prices, record highs on the stock market. So what's the big concern? But we'll see, because if the Fed really wanted to exert its quote-unquote independence, well, there it would be. I mean, they'd throw it right back in the face of President Trump. We're not taking any type of orders from you. And we're not Wall Street's lackeys. We're not going to continue to cater to the crybabies on Wall Street. Now, of course, that's exactly what they do. So I still anticipate a 25 basis point cut this month, but I will not be surprised if they hold steady, just for that reason. But then that would make it maybe even more political, so I don't know, but we'll see. Another thing I want to talk about here before we wrap up this podcast is we've been having the conversation as of late regarding the trade talk, the trade truce between the United States and China, what's likely to transpire. I have been warning my audience. You have on one side President Trump, his administration, his lackeys saying everything's great, fantastic, yada, yada, yada. You know the lines. It's going to be a signing ceremony. Never happened. Escalation. The Chinese are just sitting there, quiet, observing, listening, doing their thing. I said, well, what happens if they start talking? What happens if they start throwing their own messages out there and they don't agree with this positivity and optimism of Donald Trump and his administration? Who will the markets believe? What will happen? Will the markets, will the world believe the Chinese over the leader of the free world? If that happens, we are in a lot of trouble. It throws the credibility of the Oval Office and the White House out the window. That ain't good, ladies and gentlemen. It's not good at all. That's why words matter. That's why I wrote the letter to the president on the issue primarily of credibility. He's the leader of the free world. If the rest of the world chooses to believe the Chinese over the United States of America, there is a big problem. Now we have China continuing to come out and say, hey, this is going to be a long road ahead. Long road ahead. Further, they're saying, we still want to talk. We're still willing to talk. But if there's ever going to be a deal, all tariffs have to be removed. That's going to be incredibly difficult for the likes of Peter Navarro, our trade representative Lighthizer, and tariff man, Commander-in-Chief, President of the United States, Donald J. Trump. To convince all three of those gentlemen that all tariffs that have been placed on Chinese exports coming into the United States, I don't know if that's going to happen. I just don't know if that's going to happen. That really throws a wrench in it, doesn't it? From saying, well, we're going to continue to talk, everything's going to be okay. And then the Chinese say, well, if you want a deal, you've got to remove all the tariffs. Now, this is headlines versus headlines. Will they say, well, they're at 25%. If you go back down to 10, we can make a deal. We can live with that. Maybe. Maybe. But we live on a headline-driven world. And that's not what the headlines say. That's not what even the Chinese said. They said all. All tariffs need to be removed in order for there to be a deal. We don't want some sort of carrot and stick, which we've talked about here, as to what the United States has already said that they would want. There needs to be some sort of enforcement mechanism in place to make sure that the Chinese are following suit to what the United States wants. We even had the President of the United States come out recently and say, hey, the deal that we strike has to be in the best interest of the United States, and it has to be better for the United States than for China, because China has been ripping us off for the past 20 years. Now I guess we have to rip them off for the next 20 years, and then in 2040, we'll call it even, and then we'll come up with something else. I don't know what that means, but we'll have to see what happens. So we have to be careful here, because these markets are hanging on this. They're hanging on every word. They shouldn't be, because this is a drop in the bucket in the grand scheme of things. Tens and tens of trillions of dollars in GDP from the U.S. and China alone, not to mention the rest of the world, and everybody's hung up on, I mean, what is it? Tens of billions of dollars in taxes? That's holding everything up? That's ridiculous. The economy's slowing down in the United States, in China, around the rest of the world. You got Donald Trump coming out and telling the Chinese they want to make a deal, they need to make a deal, their economy's in the toilet. I mean, I would just love to make a deal with that guy if he was telling me, your economy sucks, and you want to make a deal, and you need to make a deal. You're going to go to the table with this guy and talk seriously? On top of it, he wants to continue to place tariffs on your goods coming into the country. Makes it difficult. Now, the president is saying, well, I'm in no hurry. Of course he's going to say that, because he has the Chinese coming out and talking, saying some things that are not in agreement with all of the positive outlook that Donald Trump and company want the world to believe. Because he's trying to propel the stock market, trying to push it up. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Because in that Peter Navarro interview, he was even talking about what I said, what I had put in writing in the letter to the president. He said, we just need to quiet down, calm down here, and let these trade negotiations go on in the background, and we'll keep you updated little by little here. That's exactly what I said. And then the idiot came out and said, well, you know, if the Federal Reserve cut interest rates and Congress passed the USMCA, the Dow would be at 30,000. I mean, these people can't help themselves. Stop with the fatuation of the stock market. You're only setting yourself up to fail. Most of the country does not own stocks. Middle America, if they do own stocks, it's probably through a 401k or through an IRA. Newsflash, you can't touch that money until you retire. Otherwise, you're fined and you're penalized. So you can have an account balance that keeps going up, fantastic, but you can't touch it. You can't touch it. And if you do, you're fined or penalized. So it's all fantastic. I want people's account balances to go up, but I want it to go up on fundamental economic news. Not because the Federal Reserve is printing funny money and it's causing inflation. I want value to increase, not just the price. You understand what I'm saying? Think about it. A lot more to discuss, but I'm going to wrap up this podcast here. Thank you so much for joining me today, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a pleasure as always. Please like, share, subscribe. Get the word out. This is the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.